Welcome to A Light on Chinese Literature from China Plus. In today's episode, we continue with the book The Spirit of the Chinese People by Malaysian Chinese scholar Gu Hongming. In this part of the essay of the same name, Gu talks about the moral law and the law of the gentleman in Confucianism. Here is your narrator, Man Ling.
All great men, all men with great intellect, have all always believed in God. Confucius also believed in God, although he seldom spoke of it. Even Napoleon, with his great practical intellect, believed in God. As the psalmist says, only the fool, the man with a vulgar and shallow intellect, has said in his heart, "There is no God." But the belief in God of men of great intellect is different from the belief in God of the mass of mankind. The belief in God of men of great intellect is that of Spinoza, a belief in the divine order of the universe. Confucius said, "At 50, I knew the ordinance of God," i.e., the divine order of the universe. Men of great intellect have given different names to this divine order of the universe. The German Fichte calls it the divine idea of the universe. In philosophical language in China, it is called Tao, the way. But whatever name men of great intellect may give to this divine order of the universe, it is the knowledge of this divine order of the universe which makes men of great intellect see the absolute necessity of obeying rules of moral conduct or moral laws, which form part of that divine order of the universe. Thus, although the belief in God is not necessary to make men obey the rules of moral conduct, yet the belief in God is necessary to make men see the absolute necessity of obeying these rules. It is the knowledge of the absolute necessity of obeying the rules of moral conduct which enables and makes all men of great intellect follow and obey those rules. Confucius says, "A man without a knowledge of the ordinance of God, i.e. the divine order of the universe, will not be able to be a gentleman of moral men." But then, the mass of mankind, who have not great intellect, cannot follow the reasoning which leads men of great intellect to the knowledge of the divine order of the universe, and cannot therefore understand the absolute necessity of obeying moral laws. Indeed, as Matthew Arnold says, moral rules, apprehended as ideas first, and then rigorously followed as laws, are and must be for the sage only. The mass of mankind have neither force of intellect enough to apprehend them as ideas, nor force of character enough to follow them strictly as laws. It is for this reason that the philosophy and morality taught by Plato, Aristotle, and Herbert Spencer have a value only for scholars. But the value of religion is that it enables men, enables and can make even the mass of mankind who have not force of intellect nor force of character to strictly follow and obey the rules of moral conduct. But then, how and by what means does religion enable and make men do this? People imagine that religion enables and makes men obey the rules of moral conduct by teaching men the belief in God. But that, as I have shown you, is a great mistake. The one and sole authority which makes men really obey moral laws and rules of moral conduct is the moral sense, the law of gentlemen in them. Confucius says, "A moral law which is outside of man is not a moral law." Even Christ, in teaching his religion, says, the kingdom of God is within you. I say, therefore, the idea which people have that religion makes men obey the rules of moral conduct by means of teaching them the belief in God is a mistake. Martin Luther says admirably in his commentary on the book of Daniel, a God is simply that whereon the human heart rests with trust, faith, hope, and love. If the resting is right, then the God too is right. If the resting is wrong, then the God too is illusory. This belief in God taught by religion is therefore only a resting, or as I call it, a refuge. But then Luther says the resting, i.e. the belief in God, must be true. Otherwise, the resting, the belief, is illusory. In other words, the belief in God must be a true knowledge of God, a real knowledge of the divine order of the universe, which, as we know, only men of great intellect can attain, and which the mass of mankind cannot attain. Thus, you see, the belief in God taught by religion, which people imagine enables the mass of mankind to follow and obey the rules of moral conduct, is illusory. Men rightly call this belief in God, in the divine order of the universe taught by religion, a faith, a trust, or as I called it, a refuge. Nevertheless, this refuge, the belief in God taught by religion, although illusory, an illusion, helps towards enabling men to obey the rules of moral conduct. For as I said, the belief in God gives to men, to the mass of mankind, a sense of security and a sense of permanence in their existence. Goethe says, piety, i.e. the belief in God taught by religion, is not an end in itself, but only a means by which, through the complete and perfect calmness of mind and temper which it gives, to attain the highest state of culture or human perfection. In other words, the belief in God taught by religion, by giving men a sense of security and a sense of permanence in their existence, calms them, gives them the necessary calmness of mind and temper
to feel the law of the gentleman, or moral sense, in them.
Which, I say again, is the one and sole authority to make men really obey the rules of moral conduct or moral laws. If the belief in God taught by religion only helps to make men obey the rules of moral conduct, what is it then upon which religion depends principally to make men, to make the mass of mankind, obey the rules of moral conduct? It is inspiration. Matthew Arnold truly says, the noblest souls of whatever creed, the pagan Empedocles as well as the Christian Paul, have insisted on the necessity of inspiration, a living emotion, to make moral actions perfect. Now, what is this inspiration or living emotion in religion? The paramount virtue of religion upon which, as I said, religion principally depends to make men to enable and make even the mass of mankind obey the rules of moral conduct or moral laws. You will remember I told you that the whole system of the teachings of Confucius may be summed up in one word,
the law of the gentleman.
The nearest equivalent for which in the European languages, I said, is moral law.
Confucius calls this law of the gentleman a secret.
Confucius says,
the law of the gentleman
is to be found everywhere, and yet it is a secret. Nevertheless, Confucius says, the simple intelligence of ordinary men and women of the people even can know something of this secret. The ignoble nature of ordinary men and women of the people, too,
can carry out this law of the gentleman.
For this reason, Goethe, who also knew this secret,
the law of the gentleman of Confucius,
called it an open secret. Now, Where and how did mankind come to discover this secret? Confucius said, "You will remember, I told you
that the recognition of the law of the gentleman
began with the recognition of the relation of husband and wife, the true relation between a man and a woman in marriage. Thus, the secret, the open secret of Goethe,
the law of gentleman of Confucius,
was first discovered by a man and woman. But now, again, how did the man and the woman discover this secret?
The law of the gentleman of Confucius.
From China Plus, you're listening to A Light on Chinese Literature.
I told you that the nearest equivalent in the European languages for the law of the gentleman of Confucius is moral law.
Now, what is the difference between the law of the gentleman of Confucius and moral law? I mean, the moral law or law of morality of the philosopher and moralist as distinguished from religion or law of morality taught by religious teachers. In order to understand this difference between the law of the gentleman of Confucius and the moral law of the philosopher and moralist, let us first find out the difference that there is between religion and the moral law of the philosopher and moralist.
Confucius says, "The ordinance of God is what we call the law of our being. To fulfill the law of our being is what we call the moral law. The moral law, when refined and put into proper order, is what we call religion. Thus, according to Confucius, the difference between religion and moral law, the moral law of the philosopher and moralist, is that religion is a refined and well-ordered moral law, a deeper or higher standard of moral law.
The moral law of the philosopher tells us we must obey the law of our being, called reason.
But reason, as it is generally understood, means our reasoning power, that slow process of mind or intellect which enables us to distinguish and recognize the definable properties and qualities of the outward forms of things. Reason, our reasoning power, therefore, enables us to see in moral relations only the definable properties and qualities, the mores, the morality, as it is rightly called, the outward manner and dead form, the body, so to speak, of right and wrong, or justice. Reason, our reasoning power alone, cannot make us see the undefinable, living, absolute essence of right and wrong, or justice, the life or soul, so to speak, of justice. For this reason, Lao Tzu says, the moral law that can be expressed in language is not the absolute moral law. The moral idea that can be defined with words is not the absolute moral idea. The moral law of the moralist, again, tells us
we must obey the law of our being,
called conscience, i.e., our heart. Therefore, when we take conscience, our heart, as the law of our being and obey it, we are liable and apt to obey, not the voice of what I have called the soul of justice, the indefinable absolute essence of justice, but the many devices in a man's heart.
In other words, religion tells us in obeying the law of our being, we must obey the true law of our being, not the animal or carnal law of our being, called by Saint Paul the law of the mind of the flesh, and very well defined by the famous disciple of Auguste Comte, Monsieur Litter, as the law of self-preservation and reproduction. But the true law of our being, called by Saint Paul, the law of the mind of the spirit, and defined by Confucius as the law of the gentleman. In short, this true law of our being, which religion tells us to obey, is what Christ calls the kingdom of God within us.
Thus, we see, as Confucius says, religion is a refined, spiritualized, well-ordered moral law, a deeper, higher standard of moral law than the moral law of the philosopher and moralist.
The moral law of the philosopher and moralist tells us we must obey the law of our being, called by the philosopher reason and by the moralist conscience. But, like religion, the law of the gentleman of Confucius tells us we must obey the true law of our being, not the law of being of the average man in the street or of the vulgar and impure person, but the law of being of what Emerson calls the simplest and purest minds in the world. In fact, in order to know what the law of being of the gentleman is, we must first be a gentleman and have, in the words of Emerson, the simple and pure mind of the gentleman developed in him.
For this reason, Confucius says, it is the man that can raise the standard of the moral law, and not the moral law that can raise the standard of the man.
Nevertheless, Confucius says, we can know what the law of the gentleman is
if we will study and try to acquire the fine feeling or good taste of the gentleman. The word in Chinese, li, for good taste in the teaching of Confucius, has been variously translated as ceremony, propriety, and good manners. But the word means really good taste. Now, this good taste, the fine feeling and good taste of a gentleman, when applied to moral action, is what in European language is called the sense of honor.
In fact, the law of the gentleman of Confucius is nothing else but the sense of honor. This sense of honor, called by Confucius the law of the gentleman, is not like the moral law of the philosopher and moralist, a dry, dead knowledge of the form or formula of right and wrong, but like the righteousness of the Bible in Christianity, an instinctive, living, vivid perception of the indefinable, absolute essence of right and wrong, or justice, the life and soul of justice, called honor.
Now we can answer the question, how did the man and a woman who first recognized the relation of husband and wife discover the secret of Goethe, the law of the gentleman of Confucius? The man and a woman who discovered this secret discovered it because they had the fine feeling, the good taste of the gentleman, called, when applied to moral action, the sense of honor, which made them see the undefinable, absolute essence of right and wrong or justice, the life and soul of justice called honor. But then, what gave, what inspired the man and the woman to have this fine feeling, this good taste or sense of honor, which made them see the soul of justice called honor? This beautiful sentence of Joubert will explain it. Joubert says, man cannot be truly just to his neighbor unless he loves him. Therefore, the inspiration which made the man and a woman see what Joubert calls true justice, the soul of justice called honor, and thus enable them to discover the secret, the open secret of Goethe, the law of the gentleman of Confucius, is love, the love between the man and the woman, which gave birth, so to speak,
to the law of the gentleman.
That secret, the possession of which has enabled mankind not only to build up society and civilization, but also to establish religion, to find God. You can now understand Goethe's confession of faith, which he puts into the mouth of Faust, beginning with the words, lifts not the heaven its dome above, doth not the firm set earth beneath us lie.
Now I told you that it is not the belief in God taught by religion which makes men obey the rules of moral conduct. What really makes men obey the rules of moral conduct is the law of the gentleman, the kingdom of heaven within us, to which religion appeals. Therefore, the law of the gentleman is really the life of religion, whereas the belief in God, together with the rules of moral conduct which religion teaches, is only the body, so to speak, of religion. But if the life of religion is the law of the gentleman, the soul of religion, the source of inspiration in religion, is love.
This love does not merely mean the love between a man and a woman from whom men can only first learn to know it. Love includes all true human affection, the feelings of affection between parents and children, as well as the emotion of love and kindness, pity, compassion, mercy towards all creatures. In fact, all true human emotions contained in that Chinese word, yin, for which the nearest equivalent in the European language is, in the old dialect of Christianity, godliness, because it is the most godlike quality in man, and in modern dialect, humanity, love of humanity, or in one word, love. In short, the soul of religion, the source of inspiration in religion, is this Chinese word yin, love, or call it by what name you like, which first came into the world as love between a man and a woman. This, then, is the inspiration in religion, the paramount virtue in religion, upon which religion, as I said, depends principally to make men to enable and make even the mass of mankind obey the rules of moral conduct or moral laws, which form part of the divine order of the universe. Confucius says, "The law of the gentleman begins with the recognition of husband and wife, but in its utmost reaches, it reigns and rules supreme over heaven and earth, the whole universe."
This has been a China Plus production. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to the podcast for free. If you have any comments about the episodes, just send us an email, podcast@cri.com.cn. We are also on Facebook and Twitter @China Plus News.